Roger Lowenstein, good morning to you. And we're going to introduce you. You're listening to WSLR 96.5 Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. It's a Real News program. Roger's going to be coming to town next week at Holly Hall, 7:30 on the 27th. And my co-host Larry is going to tell our listeners a little bit about you. Thanks, Roger, for joining us.
Good morning, Roger. Roger,
good morning, how are you?
Oh, great, and really happy that you're with us. Roger Lowenstein is one of the country's most prominent financial journalists and the source of a lot of conversation amongst those of us who've been listening to NPR, and we caught a couple of your interviews in the last couple of weeks. As also the best-selling author of 5 books. Raised in New York, Roger began his career at 2 small newspapers, first in Virginia, then in Caracas, Venezuela. In 1979, he joined the Wall Street Journal as a staff reporter. From 89 to 91, he wrote the journal's signature Heard on the Street stock market column and went on to add a new column, Intrinsic Value. Since then, he's focused on writing books and articles for national magazines and is now a columnist for Bloomberg and also writes for the New York Times Magazine and other publications. And the book is The End of Wall Street. And as Steve mentioned, Roger, you're coming to town next Tuesday for Forum Truth at the Holly Hall at 7:30. So we're really excited to see you there. Let's talk a bit about the end of Wall Street. The market is surging up as the job the job situation is still kind of flat. So we're wondering a little bit about the title, The End of Wall Street, and what's the significance of the title of the book.
Sure. By the way, it's a pleasure to be on the show, and I'm really looking forward to being down in Sarasota next week. You know, the title really works on 2 levels. First, I wanted to evoke the feeling that we had in September and October of 2008, when it seemed as though the financial system was truly going to shut down forever. Of course, it didn't. But I think in many ways a corner has turned. I think the days when the Federal Reserve chairman would say, as Greenspan used to say, that we didn't need derivatives to be regulated because the private markets would do the job themselves. The days when we were told that the Federal Reserve had figured out how to steer the economy past recessions, that was a thing of the past. The days when we believed that private bankers could be trusted to set their own limits. You know, I think this era of untrammeled free markets and a belief that we sort of had nothing to worry about, in the same way that, you know, I think 9/11 marked the end of a certain era politically, I think that the bust of 2008 took the scales from a lot of people's eyes, and we're in new waters now.
I'm sorry, Steve, do you want to...
Well, on Monday, there's going to be some type of showdown, and I think we couldn't have had you on at a better time. Can you tell us what's going to go on Monday and what we should know about it?
In Congress, you mean?
Correct.
Well, what's going to happen is, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Congress is going to pass financial reform. And although obviously there's a lot of partisan bickering, unlike with, say, health care, you don't hear the opposition, the Republicans, saying no bill, repeal. You know, what you hear is more negotiation, we don't like this, that. No congressman or senator from either party can go back to their constituents and say Wall Street is just fine the way it is, doesn't need a fix. That ain't going to happen. And I think if there was any doubt, the SEC charges against Goldman Sachs sealed the deal. Not to say that the firm is going to be convicted or not, that's for the courts, but the seaminess of the deal and the notion of billions of dollars trading on just side bets with no productive gain for the economy, I think, you know, has left such a bad taste in people's mouths that there's going to be legislation, and it's going to be significant legislation, because it's going to corral derivatives trading. And I don't want to give listeners a headache by going into the fine points of derivatives, but the main thing to get is that we had a regulatory system that worked pretty well for decades, and basically the idea was that you sell a security, you got to disclose it, what's in it, so people know what they're buying. And then in the last couple of decades, we've had new instruments that grew up outside the architecture of the 1930s disclosure laws. Derivatives, they're off balance sheet. there's very little or no disclosure. There are no capital requirements on them. And what the Congress is going to do on Monday or Tuesday is pass a law that, among other things, most significantly says all derivatives are going onto exchanges. They're going to be out in the open. They're going to be traded in standard contracts, not in these sort of, you know, behind closed doors, Goldman Sachs type deals. And that's significant.
I want to pick up on something, and it's one of the important themes in your book about Greenspan and this whole concept of perfect markets, and his being the perfect libertarian, and I guess it's him and President Bush at the time that, and the Republicans mainstream that really did believe in the perfectibility or even the perfection of the free markets. The Republicans supporting now, as they seem to be doing, some restrictions, as you're describing them, or some regulation, have they abandoned this notion that the markets are perfect just because it's politically, because it's impossible to believe that the markets, unregulated markets are free, or is it just a political thing?
Look, you know, we had 8 million people lose jobs in this country. And they know that they're all over the country. They're in blue districts. They're in red districts. It's just it's a fact on the ground. I mean, in fact, and this isn't totally partisan. Chuck Schumer, the Democratic senator, of course, from New York, one of the stalwart supporters of Wall Street, coming from New York, and that's Chuck. You know, he's sort of red faced, but he's saying, well, look, Wall Street did a lot of wrong things, and now he's backing reform. I mean, no. This is an ideology for the stalwart Republicans and Wall Street supporters. This is politics, and they know they're on, to back Wall Street now, they would be on the wrong side of political sentiments. Nobody, look at Chris Dodd. I mean, for goodness sake, he's a Democrat. He wrote the bill. He got a sweetheart loan from Angelo Mozilla. So, you know. Everybody's got religion now, and I don't think it comes down to abandoning principles. I don't know which ones had those principles, but I think this is a catastrophe, and they recognize it, and they recognize that their constituents want something done about it.
What's your assessment of how Obama is doing in both as a spokesman for this bill, but also the contents of it, and also your assessment of the head of Treasury?
Well, I would have liked to have seen a different team at Treasury, not Tim Geithner, not because he's a bad guy, but I thought that he made so many decisions in, of course, the fall of 08 when he was at the Fed, along with Bernanke. I would have liked, and Paulson, I would have liked to have seen a different team under Obama so that they could say, you know, we have a fresh hand at reviewing these decisions, some we like, some we don't, and so on, but a team that wasn't so invested. It feels a little to me like a continuation of the Bush team, and that's not a criticism of the Geithner, Paulson, Bernanke team, who did an awful lot under terribly difficult conditions. I just think that the election was a chance to bring in some fresh eyes and ears. I think Obama's speech yesterday was kind of a classic Obama. It was conciliatory. He wants Main Street and Wall Street to recover together. He says ultimately there is no dividing line between Main Street and Wall Street, but yet he's pushing for some real reforms. There are some teeth in it, and he'd like to have them working with him, but he's got a majority in both houses. I think the one area in which maybe the speech and the bill fails is it's so broad that and so diffuse that I think the average person may have a little bit of difficulty, answering the question, well, what does this bill do again?
This new red herring that got a lot of exposure on the news this morning about all the SEC executives who have been looking at porn on their websites, is that just going to blow over? I mean, it's kind of a silly thing to me to begin with.
My morning reading didn't take me there. You want to?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bring me up to speed.
I guess this is breaking news.
All right, up to 8 hours. An SEC lawyer, this is one of their lawyers, spent 8 hours on average a day at porn sites. downloading porn.
Oh, there's been a...
On the job or at
home?
On the job.
On the government computer.
Downloaded into the SEC computers and bringing memory sticks and downloading stuff from home. And, I mean, it was... I was watching George Stephanopoulos, and so they had a report on it on the.
You know, I'll tell you the truth. If the guy works 16 hours a day and spends his other 8 hours on porn, I really don't care.
Do you think he was doing his job?
8 hours just doing that and can't do his job, he shouldn't be there. But I'm really not into looking at what websites government or other employees are on. The whole inquiry is sort of offends me, and I don't care what Clarence Thomas, what websites he looked at. I don't care what,
or it still does.
Or does. I don't care what websites. SEC lawyer. I care how people do their jobs. And,
you know, it's interesting because anybody, I think you only have a right to criticize if you've never spent a half hour on an L.L. Bean website at work trying to buy a present for your kid or. Make a reservation to fly. Well, let's get back to the subject at hand. Why are the markets, a lot of people who've asked me, knowing that we're going to talk to you today, say, why are the markets going up and the job market is staying flat?
Is this another repeat
of the problem?
That's a point that Obama referenced. I thought it was a nice rhetorical point he made in his speech. He said, mentioned that the market's returning, but that's not enough. We need Main Street to return as well. It's not as conspiratorial or as dark as it seems. Wall Street runs to extremes. So, in the very dark days, the market falls from 14,000 to 6,500. And now it bounces back to 11,000. It's still down 3,000. You know, it's still down actually, back from 1999, it's still lower than it was then. That's 11 years ago. So it's not like Wall Street in any long-term sense has been doing great. It hasn't been. But it overshoots in the downside, and then it gets, maybe if it was the perfectly rational market, it would have just fallen to 11,000 and stayed there. And people would say, oh, we're in the dumps. We're still at 11,000. But because it falls lower and bounces back, people say, oh, they're raking it in again. Anyone who pays too much attention to the short-term moves on Wall Street is just going to get a headache. Alan Greenspan may think it's a rational market, but I don't.
Our guest is Roger Lowenstein, who's going to be appearing here on April 27th at Holly Hall with the Forum Truth program. At 7:30, just to remind our listeners, you're listening to WSLR Community Radio, Low Power FM 96.5 in Sarasota. And Steve, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask your opinion about the indictments, which is handed down for Goldman Sachs, and who's getting away with what, and who's not getting away with it.
Well, first, let's make clear that it's not an indictment; it's not a criminal case; it's a civil case. But the SEC has charged Goldman with defrauding an investor. I think there are two levels to look at this case. One is, did Goldman cheat one of its investors? Did it deceive it into thinking that it was selling a sort of a neutral basket of securities when, in fact, they'd been selected by this hedge fund manager who was betting on it to go down? And we don't know how a court will decide, but I can tell you from reading the suit that you get a very bad feeling if you're in the client's shoes. You want your broker, especially if it's Goldman Sachs, the most prestigious investment bank in the country, maybe the world, to be, as Warren Buffett would say, way, way, way away from the line. You don't want them to be doing things because lawyers in court can prove they're legal. You want to feel as though they're treating you as your neighbor, your friend, your brother-in-law, and so on would treat you, that you have full confidence. Not that they somehow parse the legal net. I don't have that feeling of confidence about this deal, and we'll see if the courts say they were on this side or that side of legality.
How about
Paulson's? But we expect a better standard of Goldman Sachs.
How about Paulson's involvement with this? Because
Paulson had no duty to market honestly because he didn't market. So the SEC is saying to Goldman, you didn't tell your customer that Paulson was involved in this. You lied. But Paulson didn't have a customer. So you know, there's no reason for the SEC to go after him. But I'd like to go to a different point in the suit, which I think is a broader, more serious point, which is this whole thing that they were betting about. This was a big derivative bet. Basically, you could bet that the mortgage securities would go up or you could bet that they would go down. However, no one on either side of this bet owned any of these securities. It was just a side bet. It was as if you went to Las Vegas and they were saying, are you betting on the Steelers or are you betting on the Dolphins? And you could bet mortgages would go up or mortgages would go down, but nobody was channeling any money to mortgages, to real estate, to industry. This deal wasn't financing anything. And, you know, when you go to the purpose of the title of the book, The End of Wall Street, the purpose of Wall Street, is it to raise money for productive enterprise? I thought that's why we have it. Or is it just to compete with Las Vegas and have gaming tables in New York? And this is really what upsets me about this deal, because it's representative of so many others.
Because it is, it's an empty suit, basically. As you're saying, it's not, the money is not being productive.
Goldman Sachs, I mean, the reason we regulate these firms and endorse them is because they channel money to industry. They allocate capital. Goldman Sachs, the most prestigious, dignified investment bank in the country, gets precisely 11% of its revenues from investment banking. The rest is all trading, and trading for its own account. It's really little more now than a hedge fund with a glorious past.
Is there? Do you have a series of recommendations, or are you feeling like this is ultimately the stage we're in, and it's either going to work?
Well, I would stop. I would stop derivative trades where there are no actual securities involved. In other words, where there's no money ultimately going to finance whatever it is, mortgages, shipbuilding, agriculture, whatever. You know, I don't really think Wall Street should be in the business of casino-type wagers, certainly not regulated banks such as Goldman Sachs, where the public's going to be on the line if they fail. I don't think they should be, in the business of croupier tables and so on. I don't think, the world got along fine without synthetic credit default obligations for many, many years.
Who is going to help turn things that way? Is the SEC ultimately going to be the...
Well, they're not going to go that far. What the legislation looks like it may do is say, if you're a regulated bank, any monkeying around you have to do in these things has got to be in a separate subsidiary. And, the hope is if that subsidiary had trouble, it would not be bailed out, that it would give the regulators a way to say, we'll save the subsidiary that is, taking deposits and has, customer obligations and so on, and not the other. Now, I have to tell you that when Citigroup, this is a very fun part of the book, when Citigroup was failing in November of 2008, Sheila Bair, the very independent chairwoman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, said, look, the FDIC guarantees their deposits, so nobody is going to, no depositor, no ordinary depositor is going to lose money. Why don't we let the holding company, which structured all these, wacky derivative deals, let them take the market's medicine? And Hank Paulson, of course, the Treasury Secretary, said, Sheila, I'm having an out-of-body experience here. Are you saying we should let Citigroup fail? And, of course, he wouldn't allow it. They bailed it out, and they bailed it out again. They bailed it out a third time, which I think was unfortunate, because I think that there were so many bailouts that now there really is a presumption that we're never going to let one of these big institutions fail.
Sarasota, where you are coming this week, is, a lot of the economy is driven by development, realtors, it's a real estate and tourist market.
Are they still selling land underwater there?
They're selling land. I think you could probably, in this economy...
You're interested?
In this economy, you can get something that's actually above water, but not by much. I guess the question is about the Main Street banks that are coming under a lot of criticism because they're not lending money to small businesses. The job growth is minimal here.
Yeah.
And they're not lending money to a lot of money for either economic development or to small businesses. And what's going to take the grip off of that? What's going to let some money flow again?
Well, it's a very good question. You're not going to love my answer, which is we got to be patient. And I say this for two reasons. One is banks only have one way to make money, and that's by making loans. So when they have enough capital, when their capital is restored, and when they see good prospects out there to loan money to, they will make loans, or ultimately they'll go out of business. Right now they're still reeling with foreclosures, and they're still reeling with commercial foreclosures. It was another wave of bad loans that hasn't gotten as much publicity. Now people are saying, you know, can't the government get them to issue loans? Let's remember how we got here. We don't want banks making loans that they're not comfortable making on economic grounds. And if you look at, you know, Fannie and Freddie, that were pushed and pushed and pushed by the government to blow up their balance sheets, expand their balance sheets, until they were guaranteeing, you know, millions of bad loans. We don't want to get back in the same shoes, you know, 3 years hence with a whole new crop of loans that banks were pushed or cajoled into making. So, you know, as painful as it is, I think we got to let the banking system work its own way back to a place where it's confident in its ability to make loans.
All right, you've been listening to Roger Lowenstein, and we're going to just have to leave it there. Sorry, Larry. And just come and listen to him at the Forum Truth, Holly Hall, 7:30 Tuesday. We're just flat out of time.
Roger, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure, gentlemen.
And we are certainly looking forward to Roger coming to town and joining us, and we want to thank him very much for spending a minute with us on Surreal News. What did you think, Larry?
Oh, I thought it certainly answered the questions that I had, and I hope for our listeners that you know, they got some good information as well.
Yeah, once upon a time we had dividends, and then they sort of turned into derivatives, and then they went away. Where did all our money go? It's interesting.